Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, we had just a phenomenal guest. Her name, Meryl Hemingway, and she comes from a very famous family. Her grandfather, Ernest, was probably one of the greatest playwrights and novelists of the 20th century. He spent a lot of time here in Ketchum, Idaho. He actually passed away, suicide, which was very painful. And in fact, we talked about 7 suicides in her family. And, you know, for her to avoid that plague, you know, she's had to do a lot of work. But at the same time, she decided to really go in the opposite direction and fill her life full of purpose. And from that, she's been involved in film. She's done 30 various movies and been on TV shows and splits her time between Ketchum, Idaho and Malibu. And so we just go through, and the best thing about her, of course, is that she's very authentic and real, and she has just a great sparkle in her eye about the way she approaches life. And it's just great to hear that she balances that with her regular visits here to Sun Valley, Idaho, where she can escape in the mountains and really just feel the earth and the mountains and be unplugged. So I love that. On another note, I have been working for the last year on this e-learning course called findingyoursummit.com, okay? So check that out. And we are giving away a free PDF. It's really just a kind of the tip of the iceberg of ideas and strategies, how people can get unstuck. Or you may not be stuck, but you may want to try to elevate your game to a whole different level. I mean, whether it's business, whether it's a hobby that you want to exploit, or just a relationship that you're trying to improve, we've got so many tips. And many of these things came from my coaches many, many years ago from the Pyramid of Success on how to accomplish things and get to that highest pinnacle in life, right? It's really about unleashing your potential and getting to where you want to be. And what not a better time of the year than 2019, where it's kicking off. It's just a phenomenal time of renewal and to get after it in all the right way. So check that out. And we will not only give you that free PDF download, but also there's a assessment tool that you can tap into. And there, it's a yes, no, 10 questions. It really answers and asks the questions, you know, where are you? And we offer different tips and suggestions on things that you can do to really elevate your game. And lastly, this episode is brought to you by violetsareblue.com skincare line. It's amazing products. Cynthia Besteman, she's a rock star. We love her, and we love her products, okay? And as of this podcast, I am headed down to Antarctica tomorrow, and I will be down there for the month. And if you want to find out more about that journey, you can track me at my website, markpattisonnfl.com, and you can hit expeditions and scroll down to Vinson. That's where I'm going in Antarctica. And there's a little link, and you can see the dot, dot, dot as I make my way up the mountain. Okay, so check that out. Finding Your Summit, though. I'm so excited about that.com, okay? That's it. So let's go talk to Meryl. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week, I'm so fired up for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm in Sun Valley, Idaho. Number two, I've been after this particular guest for months and months and months. I was finally able to track her down. She is here at my World HQ recording studio here in Ketchum, Idaho. And her name is Meryl Hemingway. Meryl, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Gosh, it is such an honor to have you on the pod. And you know, I go back to we're the same age, and I go back to many, many years ago. And I think I saw you up at Smoky Mountain Pizza, and I recognized you. And you know, being respectful, I'd never come over and say hi. But this podcast has obviously given me a platform to reach out to people. And this podcast is called Finding Your Summit. And I got to tell you, you've got an incredible story and you've got an incredible life, and I want to get into it. But you've got such a tie to Sun Valley, Idaho. Mm-hmm. And at the core, what is your love for this place? Why does this place bring you joy? I know you live in California too,
right,
but you keep coming
right
back.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was born in Mill Valley, California, but I moved here. My parents moved us up here when I was four. So this has been my home forever, because that's a lot of years ago. Yeah. Anyway, I always felt that this was my heart. This is where I'm, you know, where I can stabilize and where I love that you call your podcast Finding Your Summit. Yeah. My first book was called Finding Your Balance, but I like Finding Your Summit. It seems to be the next level. But the reason why I love that for me is that mountains are such representations of kind of life goals, like where we get to in our lives and how we summit things, how we get past things, how we get through things. And this has been a place of great growth for me. Yeah. I've learned more in this valley about myself, about my family, about how to live a more authentic and honest life by being here. Because I think it makes you real when you're in places that are so majestic and so powerful. I think it's a powerful place.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in there. So the first thing that you talked about were the mountains. And I grew up in Seattle, Washington, so in the Northwest. Yeah. And there's a lot of mountains and water and stream and everything around it as well. And so I spent a lot of time in the mountains. But, you know, it wasn't until I was going through a pretty rough time 7 years ago that I retreated to the mountains. And in this case, trying to climb the seven summits, you know, around the world. And so what I think that the balance that you just talked about is that serenity of really getting quiet, and being able to just really think about things that are coming at you without all these phones and emails and texts and all these other things that come through today that really distract us from really the ultimate goal that we want to go.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you talked about, you know, the summit. The name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, but you know, I should really rename it Finding Your Summits. Right. Because, you know, we're going to get into it, but I have to, you know, I've had multiple stories in my life, multiple chapters, and those represent summits. You know, there's a football chapter of my life, and there is an acting component of your life, and there's been other things of your life and other things in my life. And I think, you know, it's metaphorical really in terms of how you continue to reach for new plateaus, what you're going through at that time, and how you're going to get through it. And the only way you can go through something is as you said, is through that pain, if that's the case, or whatever the scenario is for that person.
Absolutely. And I think that nature has a representation of a mirroring, at least in my life. Nature has always been kind of my support. And also it's been what pushed me through to get to a deeper understanding of like what's happened in my life. I mean, I come from seven suicides. I did a documentary called Running From Crazy because I literally came from that. And not that they were bad people. I love those people. They were my home, my family, my people. But yeah. I also, as I got older and started to understand that they were so broken, so in so much pain, self-medicating that pain and all that stuff. And this place has been a support for me to get stable, be in the mountains. I mean, I think as a child, because my childhood was so, it was beautiful because it was here, but it was also tumultuous because there was a lot of alcoholism. My sisters were on drugs and my oldest sister was schizophrenic. It was all this stuff. Now, I didn't know anything different, but thank God for the outdoors, because I would go out for hikes into the Sawtooths for hours and hours by myself as a very young child. And that was where I felt like I was understood and I could find myself and I could, you know, I just felt supported. And I've always felt the same about this valley.
Well, okay. So somebody with a way higher grade educational system than where I'm going to go into this, you know, it would be much better at this. But I was, you know, so I did last night, Darcy and I were watching on, I don't know if it was on Netflix or not, but Running from Crazy.
From Crazy, yeah.
By the way, it's a great documentary. It was produced, I think, by Oprah.
Yes, it was.
Right? So great connection.
She executive produced it.
Yeah. So, you know, so I'm really into those types of movies. And so I've seen enough of them that are really boring. And that one, to me, right. had a lot of interesting right. components, you know, because you took a lot of old footage from your sister Margot mm-hmm. and from your dad and all these different things. And I was after watching the movie for an hour and 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And doing all this research on you, I was really like swimming around all day long on like, you know, how, what, you know, like where I'm going to go with this. And one thing that it just kept coming back to me is I really wanted to focus on you because you've really found your way. And I think you're still continuing to find your way and help other people. But I didn't want this to be about your grandfather, right? Even though he was brilliant and so many different things.
No, I understand.
And this is like your 5,000th interview, you know, and I know everybody wants to go, hey, tell me about what it was like with, and I know you're born 3 months after Ernest Hemingway,
right.
you know,
right.
passed away here in Sun Valley. But it's interesting that the one thing, and, you know, as things like run downhill, is there was a lot of mental illness with him. So he had this brilliant career, this brilliant writing career, and he was traveling all over the world and experiencing these amazing things in Spain and running with the bulls and mm-hmm. all these crazy, you know, fishing, Cuba, all these. But you know, where did that, is there an event from his life where it started where there was a lack of love, a lack of support, a lack of whatever it is to create the mental illness that created this thing?
Well, you know, it's hard to know where mental illness begins and where, you know, or where life happens to you. And then that it's a response to life. My grandfather, I mean, if you look genetically, you know, his father committed suicide. My grandmother's father committed suicide. So it was a long list of people. But I think my grandfather probably, you know, it was probably in his genetics, but also it was back in a time where nobody realized that drinking alcohol was a depressant. You know, so he was self-medicating with the very thing that was making it worse.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what you did. Those were the days,
yeah.
you know, you drank a lot and you lived a hard life.
Yeah.
You lived a big life. You know, that was something to be incredibly proud of. We're starting to come out. We're unlocking our views as creatives. People in the creative industry are starting to say, wait a second, maybe I don't have to do that. Because there is kind of a superstition that if I don't live a kind of crazy existence, if I'm not on the edge, on the razor's edge of life, like my grandfather was living, maybe I won't be as creative. And I think mm-hmm. writers have sort of taken that through generations, thinking that I need to lead a crazy life. I mean, not just writers. I think artists,
musicians,
actors,
right?
Musicians.
How many brilliant musicians have died at 27, right?
It's frightening.
Yeah.
And I think it's a misinterpretation of what creativity, the nature and the birth of creativity, which I think is, you know, I think it's just this gift that you need to nurture. And from my perspective, it needs to be nurtured from a place of health and wellness. That's just my viewpoint.
Well, we're in the same boat,
right? Yeah. I just think that you can learn a tremendous amount about yourself and you can do good in the world, but you can come from a place of being grounded. It took me lots of years of like running like a crazy woman to realize that, you know, and I'm in my 50s, as you apparently are as well.
Yeah.
And to go, oh, my God, there's a different choice to be made here. I can live an extraordinary life and be as creative as I want to be, but also be as healthy as I know I can be. And I think that's I think it's a great kind of rebirth into the new creatives of our, maybe our generation, maybe a younger generation. I don't know. I'd like to think that. I'd like to be a role model for that instead of, you know, my grandfather, who is extraordinary, and I would never say anything negative towards him because I think, I mean, it's like he's my idol, but I realize the pain that he was in when I look back at his life. It was just, oh, and you did ask a question about where that began. His mother was extremely judgmental of him, was just, you can't write, you write disgusting things, you're not
good enough.
You're not good enough.
Yeah.
basically, and dressed him up like a little girl when he was. I mean, he just had all this stuff. He pretty much did not like his mom.
Yeah.
And was always trying to prove to her, as we do as children, because you're always the child of somebody, tried to prove to her that he was, you know, he was okay, that he was authentic, that he was real, that he was doing something good. And she never believed it.
So,
or never gave him that.
Yeah, which is sad.
Yeah.
Right? Because
totally.
We all want unconditional love, right, from our parents. And one of the things that you said and you just talked about was really trying to find that holistic life, right? And obviously, you know, that's been fueled so much of the things I've done in my life. And yet where I've found my best creativity, on where I've really become clear on things that I want to do to go forward, has been in nature. Again, I go back to this thing about really getting clear. 7 years ago, I started down in Kilimanjaro and down in Tanzania, and I've been in Australia and Russia. And, you know, I mean, it's been amazing. And that journey has been incredible on its own, but it's once I'm in the mountains and you're tethered, you know, 30 feet between each other, and it's hours and hours and hours climbing up these mountains that, you know, your brain is going. And that's when the real creativity, not
Absolutely.
Going out and getting fried on, you know,
no.
drugs and alcohol and all these kind of things, that you just wake up and it's a bad cycle that you get in the next morning and you wake up late and you feel bad and da-da-da.
Absolutely. Well, it's like you said, you know, there's no internet. There's no somebody texting you when you're in the middle of nowhere,
you know,
for hours in silence.
Yeah.
That's a great testament to your ability to be okay with yourself. I mean, because that's very hard to do. And most people have a very difficult time to just be still, or, you know, stillness in the brain, you know, being silent, allowing those thoughts, allowing those fears, allowing those anxieties to come and allowing them to go. That's an extraordinary, I don't know. I just think, I think it's a brave journey to do it without, you know, drugs and alcohol and I really do. I think it's brave, but it's also, it's such a better, like the end game is so much nicer. It's like, oh my God, because you've experienced it fully. You haven't experienced it under the influence of something else. And maybe that wasn't real. You were there. So you know what it feels like to be tethered in that way, but you're still kind of by yourself, right?
Yeah.
So I have mad respect for that. Yeah. So
now so we go from your grandfather. So now we're off earnest, you know, so it's an unfortunate ending, obviously. And, you know, as you just talked about, you know, we all want the unconditional love of our parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that just can fuel people to go so far in their life and what they're meant to do and meant to be. And now we get down to your dad. And it seemed, after watching the movie again, Running From Crazy, from a lot of the scenes in there, that he also didn't have the love and support coming from his dad, Ernest.
Absolutely.
And so then it's just, it's the gift in a negative way, the gift that keeps on giving, in terms of Ernest wasn't able to, his dad, Ernest's grandpa. Yeah, so
your
great grandpa.
If you're only taught a certain thing, how are you going to give that? How are you going to give what was never given to you if you don't even know what that is? And my father was a wonderful man. And I'm conflicted about how that came out in the film, because I am not like, oh, my dad was he was not a horrible man. He was a wonderful human being. He was incredibly bright. But he was tortured. He did. And he kept repeating this pattern of getting no love, not only from his father, who didn't know how to give it, but he married a woman that my mother's first husband was shot out of the sky in World War II, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was a fighter pilot. So he was like Prince Charming, who was like taken. And so my mother never got over that. So my dad just could never live up to the guy that was shot out of the sky, because he became a normal person. He became, you know, he was real. He was human, and he couldn't be flawed. He was so much more flawed than the perfect man that was shot down. So my mother was not a loving person either. So he was he was kind of abandoned on all sides. And so my heart just goes out to him. And then my mother as well, who didn't know how to deal with those feelings of, of, of sadness, of loss, that of losing somebody that she loves so much, and it became cancer, you know, because I'm convinced if you don't deal with stuff, it becomes a physical ailment, you know.
Stress does amazing things. Yeah.
100%.
You're talking about that.
Yeah. And it's horrible. You know, I watched my ex-husband get stressed out of his life and find cancer. And I repeated the pattern of like being, you know, because I was a primary caregiver for my mother when I was very young. You know, I took care of her because I loved her so much. She was my mom.
Well, it sounded like you literally slept in the same bed until you were 14, 15 years old.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
That's crazy.
I slept there to make sure that, you know, if she was not well in the night, I could, I don't know, let the cat out or.
Oh, well, God, I mean, it was sad to me because, you know, I'm such a physically driven person that people who, use things to medicate, and there's just something that you guys called wine time, and every night that your dad and your mom, and you know, I think it was a part of the times, and B, it just got out of control, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you fall into a loveless marriage, and then it just, again, it just trickles down, you know, to
absolutely,
you know, their offspring, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's
wine
hard.
Time, yeah, wine time was one of the. What was really interesting about the movie is that Barbara Kopple, who directed the film, wonderful filmmaker. She didn't tell me that she had found this footage that Margot was making a documentary about our family and life. And I didn't know that she had it. I didn't know that it was made. So I'm doing the interview kind of like we're doing now. And she's saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. What about your childhood? And I talk about wine time. Yeah. And I remember a thing after the interview thinking, wine time sounds so weird. Did that even really happen? Like, I thought that was just, that's retarded. People don't really do that. Excuse me. I shouldn't use that word. But anyway, it's like, it can't possibly. So I watched the film for the first time. Barbara shows me a working cut of it.
Yep.
And I'm talking about wine time and she has footage of it. And it just blew my mind. I was like, there was my mother on the sink with their feet crossed.
Yeah.
Like in that, you know, like every night of my childhood, it was the same thing.
So
they didn't get into the argument because they were on film.
Well, so essentially, I mean, set this up for the listener. So wine time was around 5 o'clock or so. And every night, according to what I saw in this film, Running From Crazy, was mom and dad, mostly mom in the kitchen, but they both started pouring wine and then have wine
Absolutely.
Until essentially they went to
and
bed.
And my sisters, they would have one glass of wine and everything was kind of jovial and happy. Two glasses of wine, it gets a little more edgy. Three glasses,
look out.
They start to get funky. And four glasses, everybody's pissed off. And we would eat gourmet meals on TV trays in front of the television because nobody could communicate after that. It was just heavy and nasty, and it was just easier to watch to tell the truth and eat, you know, something, you know, pheasant en croûte, you know, like ridiculous with a Chateau Margaux on a TV tray. I mean, it was surreal when I think back on it, but of course that was my childhood.
That's
you don't
normal.
Think it's I didn't think it was. I mean, I knew that it was uncomfortable as a child. I knew. I was like, damn, this is just not fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't like this. I don't like how they would change. That's what I don't like about, you know, and I don't judge anybody who has a glass of wine or whatever, but I just don't like how things change you. If it changes you, and not in a positive way.
In a nasty way.
It's just like, what's the point? And I watched that and I said to myself when I was really young, I will never do that. Of course, I went to the extreme on the other side. I've eaten every way. I've, you know, done every diet on planet Earth. I've, you know, followed a lot of gurus.
Well, really, though, I think at the central core of everything you're talking about is again, it's not necessarily about wine time. It's really about this whole connection of love.
Yes.
Right?
And nobody could really communicate. There was a lot of talking, but there was no communication. Nobody could express how they really felt.
Yeah.
So a sister who's brilliant, by the way, my oldest sister is still alive, Muffet, her real name is Joan, you know, who took drugs in a, you know, it was the late 60s, early 70s. So it was kind of the time for that. She was experimental and all of that stuff. So there's that. And she can't communicate that she's falling apart. And my parents would not even acknowledge that was mental illness. They were like, She's just a problem kid. Yeah. We need to get, you know, but that was also the time. But nobody actually had a conversation about any of it. They would take my sister away to, they said, college, and we'd go visit her. And I was like, are there bars on the windows of the college? Because she was a mental institution up in Blackfoot, Idaho, like a wingding house, and I'm 7 years old going,
this doesn't look right.
This is just weird. Yeah. And I loved her. She was amazing, but nobody ever said anything. Nobody ever talked about it. That's why, for me, my passion is to talk about the most uncomfortable things, the things that make us so like nervous in our heads. And because the minute you say them, they don't have power over you. The minute you can express them, they can't run your life anymore. And I'm a big believer that memories don't have daggers and they can't kill you again. You know, it can't do what it did the first time. They're just memories. But we need to address those memories. We need to address the memories. We also need to address, you know, the elephant in the room. And if there's mental illness in your family, you got to deal with it. If there's alcoholism, you got to deal with it. And it doesn't mean it just means be honest.
Yeah.
Be honest about it.
Well, it's hard to do, right?
I say that knowing it is the most difficult thing for everyone to do.
Well, again, you know, the name of this podcast is Co-Finding Your Summit, right? And so I think for a lot of people who listen to this podcast, and it's grown, you know, to thousands of people now that listen and download, which I'm very thankful for. But, you know, I think one of the reasons why is because we can all identify, right?
Absolutely.
So I can't identify necessarily with mental illness. I've not had that in the family that I'm aware of. I could be it, but, but you know, there's always something. And it, you know, I ask the question to people when I public speak, has anybody ever gone through a hard time, a tough time? And if somebody doesn't raise their hand, they're lying.
Oh, absolutely.
And like you said, the best thing you can do is step into it. Right. And
absolutely.
Bring that on. And it's,
I, you know, I call it mental, but I'm very careful with my words. Like if I speak to, you know, thousands of people, because some people get very uncomfortable with that. But mental instability, I should say, is addiction. It's going through loss. It's ever, I mean, all of us have dealt with it. It doesn't mean that you're mentally ill or anything, but we all deal with it. Just like you said, when you're saying to an audience, have you been through a hard time? That's a time of, you know, it's a dark time.
Yeah.
Dark times happen to everybody. You don't have to be mentally ill to have tough times, you know, being broken up with, being, you know, like all the things that we do as go through as humans, dealing with somebody's illness, a family member that's not well, you know, or yourself, or you something, you know, all of those things create.
This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name MarkP20, that's MarkP20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out, LairdSuperfood.com.
Dealing with somebody's illness, a family member that's not well, you know, or yourself, or you something, you know, all of those things create places because we don't want to be there. And that's a dark time.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be where you are, then you're not, you know, then that's tough.
Well, and on the other side of that too, what the hardest thing, at least I found, is that the more vulnerable that I could be, you know, the stronger and the higher, the more, you know, like I could achieve much greater things.
Right.
Right. Going on the other side. But it's hard to like step through and accept it and, you know, go
absolutely.
Through that. Okay. So the one thing I do want to say about your dad, Jack, was that recently I was with a fly fishing expert up here. He was a guide. He's not now, Jim Kirkkonen. And he took me up to Silver Creek. And it was the best experience. And I've heard from years and years and years and years about Silver Creek. And it is like the Mecca. It's the Augusta of golf. You know, I mean, this is where the heart is fishing. And I went up there and it had just a great day of fishing. We caught a bunch and we zipped all around. And then at the end, he said, hey, look over there. That's the Jack Hemingway Memorial right by the bridge. I'm sure you've been over there.
Yeah.
And so it was just a cool moment. Yeah. And so when I was going through this, so I want to acknowledge that, you know, so.
Yeah, my dad, he had a lot to do with making that happen in this, you know, he came up to Idaho. He was a stockbroker in California and he came to Idaho and he became a fish and game commissioner because that's all he ever wanted to do. And the funny thing is the reason why he fished so much and why he was so good is that Ernest made him watch. He would never let him fish when he was a kid. He was like, no, you just sit in the boat and you watch. And so I'm convinced that my dad, just the minute he was like an adult, was like, screw you. I'm going to fish every
flipping
day of my life. Yeah. And he did. He actually jumped out. He was a paratrooper. He jumped out of a plane with his fishing rod into France.
That's awesome.
He got kidnapped and was a prisoner of war but while he was fishing.
Well, that's fly awesome. Fishing. Yeah. Crazy story.
Good stuff.
Yeah. And by the way, your name I read comes from Ernest
Cuba.
Ernest and your dad were in Cuba and they were having a Cuban port called Mariel. And that's where your name came from.
Yes. It's a little fishing village outside of Havana.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fishing village. I actually went there recently thinking, oh my God, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of a real industrial that's really sadly so ugly. I was like, wow, it's not really what I thought it was gonna be. And there was a time, remember when the Marielitos were being sent from Cuba and they were all the derelicts and the mentally ill?
Yeah.
But it was not when I told people where my name came from. I was like,
well, it's a cool name. It's a cool name.
No, now it's very cool.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. So let's get into your sister, Margot.
Yes.
Okay, so she's a fascinating soul. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. she also passed away when she was 42 years old, drug overdose. But she went off and she was how many years older than you?
She was 7 years older than me.
So she's 7 years old. So there's this dynamic around wine time and your mother and how she had lost her original husband in the war. And so she married somebody maybe she shouldn't have married and your dad was unhappy and all this kind of stuff. And there's not enough love. And they have three sisters and two of them are much older. Well, Margot was the middle child. So she's 7 years old.
Joan was 11 years or is 11 years
11
older
years
me.
Older than you. Okay. So part of what I was understanding from the film was that you were not felt or you didn't feel like you're either loved enough or worthy enough or accepted enough just because your parents had already kind of done the thing with the two older kids. And now you're like the third, you know, years later, you're young and you could kind of come and go and do whatever you want.
I mean, in some ways that was probably a blessing, but you know, when you're a kid and you just like, hi.
Yeah.
You want somebody to pay attention to you. I wrote a book called Invisible Girl, which I wrote two books at the same time. One is called Out Came the Sun, and that's my whole life kind of looking back at all these stories and, you know, the derivation of all the different things that have happened. And then Invisible Girl I wrote from the perspective of a 14-year-old and what it was like to be in my family. And basically, I felt invisible. I felt like I could do anything and nobody would really care. I remember running away a couple times and waiting, like hoping and then going back in the house and nobody'd even notice. You know, I'd been out for 4 hours, snowstorm, and I'm sitting underneath a fence, like where there's like the ability to be in there. Yeah. But like, anyway, whatever. It was like a cave. And I sat in there for 4 hours. Like it was bundled up and nobody came. Goddamn people. I came in, just went to bed. Nobody said a word. And I don't say that like, oh, poor me. I just say that it was like, it was interesting. I also felt very able to see everyone because I felt invisible. I felt like I had this ability to see what was going on. So it probably was a gift. It probably gave me the strength to figure out a new way. Because I think everybody in a family, so there's always somebody in a family that goes, we're not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
This sucks. I don't want to give this to my girls. You know, like they're going to have problems. Well, they're human beings.
That had to be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was the one that said, okay, I'm not going to do it with drugs and alcohol. I'm not going to not deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I made some wacky choices, you know, in health and wellness, what I thought was healthy and well and all that stuff. But it led me to being, I can honestly say that, you know, after years of being super self-conscious and not secure and not liking myself, that I can say at 57 years old that I really like myself. I like who I am. And that was hard for me for a long time because I thought, oh, that sounds so egotistical. You like yourself. Who the flip do you think you are?
Yeah.
But you learn that, you know, self-love, you know, people talk about it all the time, but until you actually feel what that feels like, it's like, oh, that's what that is. That's a sense of placement. That's a sense of groundedness. That's a sense of being in your world and being present in it. Doesn't mean that you're always happy, but you are who you are, where you are in that moment. And I can honestly say that I've gotten to a place where I can be present. I can be here now speaking to you about whatever we're talking about. And that's where I am. I'm no place else. I was never like that. I was always like, the reason why I called it running from crazy is that I thought, oh crap, that's coming for me. I'm going to end up like them. So I was just like on the move. Like I got to dodge it. Yeah. Like I'm out of here.
Well, there's always two perspectives, right? So there's the inside out, how you feel mm-hmm. about the world. And then there's outside in, how the world perceives back at you. And it's interesting because you've got this famous name, right? And you're here in Ketchum, Idaho, and down the street from us is the Hemingway School, right? That you attended. and so from the outside, because you come from a famous family and then you went on to have this really amazing career in film. We'll get into that. But everybody thinks like you've got it all together, right? And just because you come from, and again, it's really about that self-love and really isolating all the things that make you happy and staying present.
Yeah.
And that's what really gives you the gift of giving and really being present for your daughters and everybody else that you come in contact with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I didn't have that for a long, long time. And I didn't raise my girls as stable as I would have liked. I thought I was, you know, you do the best you can.
Yeah.
I'm with my partner now is an amazing man and he taught me how to play. I didn't know how. It's like my grandfather didn't know how to love because he was never loved. I didn't know how to play. I remember watching my girls playing outside, you know, with their dad when they were young. And I thought I was jealous and I didn't know how to do it. I would fake it. I would go out there and like pretend like I was
kicking the soccer ball. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was never present with them. I was always, it was always like, there was always a schedule to keep. And like, I was really good at the mom stuff, but yeah. I wasn't good at the just being. I just didn't know how to be. And that, it actually breaks my heart even now. That's the one thing. It's the one memory that just hurts me because I think, damn, why didn't, you know, I didn't know how to do that. Yeah. I didn't know how to do that. And my partner now, Bobby, he taught me how to play. He would just do ridiculous things. And I'd be like, what are we doing? He'd be like, nothing. Just having fun. And he'd make like weird voices and do all kinds of weird. I was like, he would stop on the road and like take it. He was like, we're going to take a nap. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, we're going to take a nap and then we're going to climb up that thing. I said, but we're going somewhere. He's like, why? Why do we have to do, like he broke the, he was full pattern interrupt. I was like, wait. But he taught me how to be like relaxed and spontaneous. And it's been the greatest gift of my life. And now when I see my girls and they're always like, you laugh so much now. You're like, I'm like, I know. And I'm so sorry that I wasn't that when you were younger. You know, get to where we get.
Yeah, it seems to me, right? And I'm not the dime store psychologist, which is that, you're just you're almost were in a more of a control freak. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but just be.
I would
right?
say,
yeah, yeah. So,
if you want to call it something, it was probably OCD.
Well, no, I mean, seriously, if you were trying to control your environment because
absolutely.
It was because of the way the chaos that you're growing up in.
Well,
at the
it was
time.
A reaction. It was like, okay, well, better than drugs and alcohol. At least I'll control what I eat. I'll control the environment. I'll control what the girls do. I'll control everything, like you said. Yeah. And of course, that's when you realize you have absolutely no control.
Right. And then you let go and, you know, life is so much better. Right. So it takes a long time. I mean, that's easy to say and hard to do.
I was just going to say, then you let go. It was a process.
Okay. So now your sister, Margot. So she goes off. She's 7 years older than you. And so she's probably around 20, 21 years old. And she decides to go off to New York. And
she's actually 19.
19. Yeah. So she gets discovered. She's a famous model. And now she has a film that she's going to be in called Lipstick, of which she somehow or another recruits you to be in this thing. You're 14 years old, 15 years old, right?
I was 12.
You're 12 years old, right?
I turned 13 or 14 on the set.
And so you, did I get this right? You, I'm not sure if the word drop out, but you left school?
I didn't drop out of school. I mean, I was allowed to go to LA to make this movie.
Okay. So now
I make this movie with my sister, who I'm actually a little bit surprised asked me to do it because she wasn't.
There's a lot of dysfunction going there with all the sisters.
She didn't, and I was not her favorite person. But like the minute I came, it was like, oh, you've taken my position.
But, okay. So, but not only that, is she supposed to be the star of the movie, but you end up getting a Golden Globe nomination for this movie. And she gets trashed in terms of her performance.
Horrible. It was awful.
And so whatever dysfunction you guys had at that
time. It just magnified it, right? Pretty much.
Yeah.
It was a bad situation.
Yeah. So tell me about, okay, so then you go from there. And then the next movie you do is with Woody Allen in Manhattan. And then you get an Academy Award nomination for that. So your career is just on this trajectory, right? Just off you go. Mm-hmm. And what was that like to get a taste of the Hollywood life? You've now done 30 plus movies, you know, all those things. I mean, so tell me what that was like.
You know, for me, it was never an end all. It wasn't like, oh, wow, my dreams have come true. For me, it was more about discovering that the world that I grew up in wasn't the world that wasn't the entire world. Like, going off and what I loved about making Manhattan was the fact that I was in the city and people on the set were, you know, they were happy and sharing information and there was communication. Movies were more about communication. I think that's, I'd so longed for somebody to like communicate with me. Mm-hmm. And I felt visible, you know, for the first time in my life. I felt like, oh, I'm not invisible. Maybe I'm, so for me, it wasn't like, oh, Hollywood's so great. It was just more, I saw different people thinking different things, listening to me. So it made me feel more important, more heard. I shouldn't say more important, but, I had some bratty moments too. There was a couple times I made this movie Personal Best and I was, pretty much a stinker about one of the girls that was playing the other lead in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I was just being horrible. I was talking crap about her to the crew and the director pulled me into the trailer one day and just said, cut it out. You're being awful. And it scared me. It was a big learning curve for me just because I was like, oh, it was a reality check for me. I never misbehaved on a set again. I never said anything nasty about another person.
Did you get into the whole, like your sister, let's go there for a minute and then I want to go back to you. Okay. So your sister, based on what I saw in this movie, to me just didn't seem like a person. Margot, she got tremendous amount. I mean, she was on the cover of Time magazine and Glamour and she was the top model in the world and she's got these movies coming out. And she was in Studio 54 in New York. And I mean, it was just insane. And to me, like some of the interviews I saw, she just didn't seem grounded.
She was probably most of the interview, all of the interviews that you saw in Running From Crazy, she was drunk.
Yeah.
She was very drunk.
Yeah, she seemed
And it was so strange because when they were happening, of course, as family members, we could tell that she was like, it didn't even sound like the, you know, she sounded drunk.
Yeah.
And so that was, it was sad.
Yeah.
It was too much too fast. And like for me, it was like one step removed. So my sister is this big star, overnight sensation. Like you said, first, she was the first model to ever be on the cover of Time magazine and first model to make have a $1 million contract, all of these things. And I kind of, it was another ability to just like step back as the invisible girl and go, I don't think I want that. And even though I was making movies, I knew that I just, you know, I was in Studio 54 with her when I was 14 years old, and she was drunk or probably high on something. And, you know, her dress is falling off. Mm-hmm. She's like dancing around, and I'm like the little sister trying to like keep her covered
because
there's people, paparazzi, like taking her picture, and she's just like out of her mind. So there's this like photo from there, and I'm trying to like cover her, and I look like I look terrified.
Yeah.
But I just knew that that's not what I didn't want, that kind of career.
So wait a minute, let me break that down. So you're saying you didn't want the career because what you just mentioned?
Well, she was part of the jet set. She wasn't working on her craft. She was
okay. So it wasn't so much about the career; it was about what came with it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, she had a career.
Yeah.
You know, she was huge star, but being a star and being an actor, being a creative was a different thing.
Yeah.
And that for me is, I started to understand, it's like, if I want to do this, I really want to be good at this. And she wasn't you know what I mean? She wasn't studying. She wasn't trying to make the craft better. She thought that it was all happening to me just like that. Kind of like I came into the picture when she was a baby. It was like, wait, she just comes and this happens. Little did she know that I was working on it, but I couldn't tell her that because we had this uncomfortable relationship. There was at one point when we were, I had made Manhattan and Personal Best, and she was in LA, and she asked me to come to a hotel room with her. And she said, will you help me with this part, an audition or something? I thought to myself, oh, I don't know if that's such a good idea, but I did. And I showed up, and it was uncomfortable. And she didn't understand. She couldn't hear me. And I understood why she couldn't hear me. I was like her little sister trying to tell her how to act.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that was her dream. And I all of a sudden, it looks like I've just stumbled into it. And it's like, oh, it's all great for you because you know how to do it. And I was trying to tell her how to do it. She left me in the hotel room and I was going to spend the night. And she came in later. She'd gone downstairs and she was drinking. I didn't know that. I was asleep. And her hands were around my neck and she was crying. And she was saying, why is it so easy for you?
Mm.
And I was like, holy shit, I'm being choked. And, you know, she was blacked out. She didn't know what she was doing. But that was so reminiscent of the pain that she was constantly in, because she didn't understand that to do what you have to do creatively, you have to work at it. You have to understand it. Or something, you know?
Well, it's like anything. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of examples of some real estate guy that does the big deal and, you know, they're off and running or, you know, I mean, on the other side of that, I think a guy like Tom Brady, you know, what a great example of a guy who's in his 40s, you know, and he just keeps working on his craft harder than anybody else out there. And so he just, it's not about the stardom. It's not about the fame. It's about the craft.
Well, that can get you in the door. And certainly I probably got my first two films from being Mariel Hemingway.
Yeah.
But to stay there and to actually make a difference in that world, you have to work really hard. You actually have to work harder because people are like, you know, and they're ready to tear you down. And what happened to Margot was she became such a big star, and we're horrible in America. It's like, mm-hmm. you're big. Wait, we'd love to tear you down.
Yeah.
And that's happened to me, but I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I knew. I was ready. I was like, dude, people are nice at a certain point. And not everybody's your friend. I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm not that jaded and like I have a dark view of everyone. But, you know, for the most part, you go up and you come down.
Yeah,
and
the
that's
way it goes.
Career.
Yeah.
You know, that's the life of whatever. You know, because you say, like, I'm going to act again. But it's not easy. It's not easy being 57. Like, yeah. You know, where, you know, I'm not going to be an ingenue. I'm gonna, like, so it's, and she just didn't understand that you had to ride the wave. You know, and things were good, and then they would, you know, they go dark. And I think I just had a better understanding of what that life just had cycles.
Yeah.
You know, but I think also if you're under the influence of anything else, it's really hard to see.
No, your judgment is so skewed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so now you have your two girls, your beautiful girls, from your first husband. You divorced, and now you're with this wonderful guy who's taught you how to play. And so let's talk about stopping the cycle, mm-hmm. right? So there's the great great grandfathers, the grandfather, there's the dad, not necessarily a mental illness, but just, yeah. again, just talking about how to love and how to support and just everything you can possibly do to support and nourish and uplift your kids and love them unconditionally. And so rather than you go down the same cycle, putting the brakes on. And from what I could tell from the movie, your kids were really connected with you.
Yeah.
They seem that way.
Very much so.
Right?
Very much so. I think I have a very, very, it's a clean relationship. I mean, I think we're very, you know, we are very close. You know, we have our moments, but we, I've been very honest with them. I try to be really clear about, you know, it was hard when I decided to leave their dad, you know, like it always is
yeah.
for any,
I've been through
any,
it. I understand that. Yeah.
It's awful. Rough.
Yeah.
And it's rough to be the one that leaves, you know, yeah. It's like, oh, why do I have to be? But anyway, I did. And it was the right thing to do. But it's also really, I don't care. My girls were older. It doesn't matter. They're still kids and they're still, you're still like, they're still affected by that because that's their world.
Yeah.
So to break that world up. So that it was, you know, that was a rough, but very good time. And honestly, what, 12 years later, we're still healing from that. You know, there's still things to be healed. I see it gets easier and easier, obviously. They're women, but you know, it's just, life is a journey. But I mean, getting back to stopping the cycle, that had all, even when I was married, that was always my, in the back of my mind, it was like, I don't want to give them extra baggage. I don't want to give them extra baggage of a family that they didn't have anything to do with. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to give them just, like you said, unconditional love and support, make them feel like they're the most amazing people.
Which
that
they are.
I know.
Which
and
they are.
Yeah,
which they are. My yeah. kids are. I mean, that's just yeah. what, I mean, that's, that's, you know, it's like the gift that keeps on giving in the positive sense, right?
Yeah.
And then in hopefully that when they find their eventual partners, they can have a healthy relationship and they can pass that love on to their kids and their support and everything else that goes with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the amazing part. So tell me today what your life is all about. I know you moved between LA and Idaho, Ketchum, mm-hmm. Sun Valley here. You're still involved in film.
Mm-hmm.
And you've written a couple books, mm-hmm. right? And you've got this whole thing about holistic living.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about that.
So, yes, actually, it's been a passion. I mean, I think in an obsessive way to a very healthy, grounded way, Bobby and I wrote a book together called Running with Nature that's all about just like healthy lifestyle and making simple choices, connecting in nature, sleeping a lot, eating good food, you know, exercising, but finding the exercise that works for you. We're not cookie cutters, you know, we're not the same diet's not going to work for you, that's going to work for me, that's going to work for my boyfriend, that's going to work for my kids. It's about finding balanced, healthy ways into your life. My message for people, the thing that I want people to know is that people are already extraordinary. They're already their extraordinary being that they envision themselves to be or wish they could envision. It's already in them. It's just a matter of how do you fine tune your habits in order to chip away at the things that are keeping you from being your best self. And I believe lifestyle has everything to do with finding who you are and the best of you, through food, through exercise, through meditation or prayer, or whatever it is that you believe in, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And water, breathing, you know, like they're all of those things. All of those things matter to creating your best self. And your best self is not my best self. You know, we all are so unique as individuals. So, and mental health is a part of that. You know, that's why I mention meditation, silence, getting out in nature, all of those things. Everything we do in our lives has to do with our holistic well-being, because that's what holism means.
Yeah.
It's the full spectrum.
You know, I love that. And I was going to ask you, Mariel, okay, so give me like your top three tips on how, you know, you emerged out of, you know, finding your summit. You've had multiple summits like me, you know, how you've made it through the pain and gone through this chaos of growing up and then, you know, ultimately getting this whole Hollywood lifestyle and making sure that you don't fall down the same pattern that unfortunately your sister did, Margo, to connecting with this guy, Bobby, who seems like you have a wonderful relationship and really finding out how to play, to really passing down the gift of love to your daughters. Mm-hmm. But you just mentioned, you know, a bunch of them, you know,
yeah.
And it's beautiful. And I think you're right. I mean, it's just like we all have to become the best that we can be, but you can't do that when you're have 1,000 things going on and you're running from point A to B, you know, yeah. in, you know, 2 seconds.
You have to slow down.
And I
think that's really hard for us. We live in a society that's not about slowing down.
Yeah.
It's about going faster. You know, we have technology that's faster.
Yeah.
Everything is faster. Not that I don't enjoy it, but we have to, it's like you have such a responsibility to regulate yourself. You know, it's like we have to regulate the technology. And like Bobby and I've made rules because if we didn't make those rules, we'd become overwhelmed. So even though that's not the most present, you know, or spontaneous thing to do, it's like the internet goes off at 8 p.m. You know, it's off. And it doesn't go on until, you know, 8 a.m. in the morning for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, we just try to, you know, when the kids aren't there, then you worry. Like, oh, do I not want to have the phone on because they might call. But it's about prioritizing the things that you know are going to make you feel better and be better. Because, and like I was saying before, I think our best selves are already there. We just don't know how to find them as human beings. It's just hard because our, you know, how we were brought up is contrary. Society sort of says, do this and, you know, and everybody tells you to eat the same way, you know, but there's not one diet, there's not one way, there's not one religion, there's not one prayer, there's not one spirituality, it's so unique to the individual. So for us, it's just about, you know, for me, being still and silent in the morning, I meditate every morning. That's one of the most crucial things that I do because it's not that the answers come in those silent moments or whatever. Sometimes I'm annoyed. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, can I just get through this? And sometimes I could be there for hours. But for the most part, it's because what it does is it creates space. And when you create space inside your being, inside your brain, answers come to you, calmness comes to you, you become much more aware. And when you're aware, then you get answers to problems and things, you know, you just have, it's like an innate sense comes to you. And I think that's why Bobby and I get outside so much. And especially like up here in the summer, we do a lot of, barefoot walking.
Yeah. I saw you doing that.
Right. We do that stuff because it keeps you, it literally grounds you and it makes your innate sense of the world better. You know, animals, you always are like, why do they know that there's a storm coming? Why do they?
Yeah.
They know because their feet are on the ground. Yeah. They feel it. They have the energy. And it's not woo-woo stuff. They energetically feel it. And we have just, we're so detached, and we get more technology and we get more detached. So it's important for us to just make those connections to nature. And so nature and silence and finding rituals that mean something to you.
Yeah.
What, you know, sometimes it's making your coffee in the morning. It can be, but it's like, can you do that and do nothing but that in that moment?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we are talking on the 27th of December. We'll run this pod in a couple of weeks, but it's this time of year that people have, it's very reflective, right? Like what happened last year and where am I going forward in the coming year? And, you know, really, I think what one of the things I love that you said is that you're not just waiting till December 31st to start making your New Year's resolutions, right? Because you're silent every day and because you have that moment of space, as you called it, it allows you to possibly reset or keep going on certain things that are going on in your life. For me, you said another thing that I really identify with, that we all have our own different ways of doing things that get us to that end point that we want to go. And for me, I get up every morning and run up the mountain or go to the gym or something.
Yeah.
And just, I need to have that solitude. 100%. I don't want to talk to anybody. Right. And that's where I get my space and I fill my head full of positive thoughts, podcast. You know, I rarely listen to music just because I want to have things fed into my brain, either the silence or just, you know, those things that people are talking to me and books and things like that, that really can fuel me on where I want to go.
Yeah. No, I so understand. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, your summits are literally summits, but there you go.
Well, I've got
another one. A little bit jealous.
Well, I'm going down to Antarctica next week. So I'm,
wow.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, you talk about being quiet and being, you know, I mean, there's like the puffins, you know, these penguins.
Yes.
And that's about, there's not one blade of green, four planes to get in, private chartered, you know, thing to fly you in on the ice. And it's just going to be remarkable.
That'd be remarkable, but it sounds like too cold. It sounds really cold.
Well, it's -40, so don't
Are
tell
you
anybody
going?
That. No.
Thank you. Maybe it's just a girl thing.
No,
it's just like,
no. Well, he's not going either.
How many jackets do I have to take?
You got to take a lot of stuff. Well, listen, Mariel, thank you so much.
Thank you
this
so
has
much.
Been it's just been... just a treat for me.
So great.
Yeah. Now we're neighbors, sort of,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there you go. Now I know where you live.
Now I live exactly.
Nobody's honking down there, so I guess I left enough room for people to pass in my car.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So, you know, normally what I say is, where can people find you? I don't know if that's appropriate here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
MarielHemingway.com or .co. Anyway, complicated, but both of those will get you to me. Yeah, I'm producing films and acting in films and also just doing the health and wellness stuff and doing a lot of speaking around the country on mental health and physical health. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, it's all awesome.
Right. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Take care.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.